Chapter 38, Visit to Oregon. By the close of the winter 1877 to 78, which was spent in California, my husband had improved in health, and as the weather in Michigan had become mild, we returned to Battle Creek that he might have the benefit of treatment at the sanitarium. I dared not accompany my husband across the plains, for constant care and anxiety and inability to sleep had brought upon my heart difficulties which were alarming. We felt keenly as the hour of separation drew on. We knew not that we should meet again in this world. My husband was returning to Michigan, and we had decided that it was advisable for me to visit Oregon and bear my testimony there to those who had never heard me. The voyage. In company with a lady friend and Elder J. N. Loughborough, I left San Francisco on the afternoon of June 10, 1878, upon the steamer Oregon. Captain Connor, who had charge of this splendid steamer, was very attentive to his passengers. As we passed through the Golden Gate into the broad ocean, it was very rough. The wind was against us, and the steamer pitched fearfully, while the ocean was lashed into fury by the wind. I watched the clouded sky, the rushing waves leaping mountain high, and the spray reflecting the colors of the rainbow. The sight was fearfully grand, and I was filled with awe while contemplating the mysteries of the deep. It is terrible in its wrath. There is a fearful beauty in the lifting up of its proud waves with roaring, and then falling back in mournful sobs. I could see the exhibition of God's power in the movements of the restless waters, groaning beneath the action of the merciless winds, which tossed the waves up on high as if in convulsions of agony. As I looked upon the white-capped, roaring billows, I was reminded of that scene in the life of Christ, when the disciples, in obedience to the command of their Master, went in their boats to the farther side of the sea. When nearly all had left for their staterooms, I continued on deck. The captain had provided me a deck chair and blankets to serve as a protection from the chilly air. I knew that if I went into the cabin, I should be sick. Night came on, darkness covered the sea, and the plunging waves were pitching our ship fearfully. This great vessel was as a mere chip upon the merciless waters, but she was guarded and protected on her course by the heavenly angels, commissioned of God to do His bidding. Had it not been for this, we might have been swallowed up in a moment, leaving not a trace of that splendid ship. But that God who feeds the ravens, who numbers the hairs of our heads, will not forget us. The last night we were on the boat, I felt most grateful to my Heavenly Father. I there learned a lesson I shall never forget. God had spoken to my heart in the storm and in the waves and in the calm following. And shall we not worship Him? Shall man set up his will against the will of God? Shall he be disobedient to the commands of so mighty a ruler? Shall we contend with the Most High, who is the source of all power, and from whose heart flows infinite love and blessings to the creatures of His care? Meetings of special interest. My visit to Oregon was one of special interest. I met here, after a separation of 4 years, my dear friends, brother and sister Van Horn, whom we claim as our children. I was somewhat surprised and very much pleased to find the cause of God in so prosperous a condition in Oregon. Tuesday evening, June 18, I met a goodly number of the Sabbath keepers in this state. I gave my testimony for Jesus and expressed my gratitude for the sweet privilege that is ours of trusting in His love, and of claiming His power to unite with our efforts to save sinners from perdition. If we would see the work of God prosper, we must have Christ dwelling in us. In short, we must work the works of Christ. Wherever we look, the whitening harvest appears, but the laborers are so few. I felt my heart filled with the peace of God and drawn out in love for His dear people with whom I was worshiping for the first time. On Sunday, June 23, I spoke in the Methodist Church of Salem on the subject of temperance. On the next Tuesday evening, I again spoke in this church. Many invitations were tendered me to speak on temperance in various cities and towns of Oregon, but the state of my health forbade my complying with these requests. We entered upon the camp meeting with feelings of deep interest. The Lord gave me strength and grace as I stood before the people. As I looked upon the intelligent audience, my heart was broken before God. This was the first camp meeting held by our people in the state. I tried to present before the people a gratitude we should feel for the tender compassion and great love of God. His goodness and glory impressed my mind in a remarkable manner. I had felt very anxious about my husband on account of his poor health. While speaking, there came vividly before my mind's eye a meeting in the church at Battle Creek, my husband being in the midst, with the mellow light of the Lord resting upon and surrounding him. His face bore the marks of health, and he was apparently very happy. I was overwhelmed with a sense of God's unparalleled mercies and of the work he was doing, not only in Oregon and in California and in Michigan, where our important institutions are located, but also in foreign countries. I can never represent to others a picture that vividly impressed my mind on that occasion. For a moment, the extent of the work came before me, and I lost sight of my surroundings. The occasion and the people I was addressing passed from my mind. The light, the precious light from heaven, was shining in great brilliancy upon those institutions which are engaged in the solemn and elevated work of reflecting the rays of light from heaven that heaven has let shine upon them. All through this camp meeting, the Lord seemed very near me. When it closed, I was exceedingly weary, but free in the Lord. It was a season of profitable labor and strengthened the church to go on in their warfare for the truth. On Sunday following the camp meeting, I spoke in the afternoon in the public square upon the simplicity of gospel religion, a prison service. During my stay in Oregon, I visited a prison in Salem in company with Brother and Sister Carter and Sister Jordan. When the time arrived for service, we were conducted to the chapel, which was made cheerful by an abundance of light and pure fresh air. At the signal from the bell, two men opened the great iron gates and the prisoners came flocking in. The doors were securely closed behind them, and for the first time in my life I was immured in prison walls. I had expected to see a set of repulsive-looking men, but was happily disappointed. Many of them seemed to be intelligent and some to be men of ability. They were dressed in the coarse but neat prison uniform, their hair smooth and their boots brushed. As I looked upon the varied physiognomies before me, I thought, to each of these men have been committed peculiar gifts or talents to be used for the glory of God and for the benefit of the world, but they have despised these gifts of heaven, abused and misapplied them. As I looked upon young men from 18 to 20 and 30 years of age, I thought of their unhappy mothers and of the grief and remorse which was their bitter portion. Many of these mothers' hearts had been broken by the ungodly course pursued by their children. When all the company were assembled, Brother Carter read a hymn, and all had books and joined heartily in singing. One who was an accomplished musician played the organ. I then opened the meeting by prayer, and again all joined in singing. I spoke from the words of John, "Behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." 1 John 3:1-2. I exalted before them the infinite sacrifice made by the Father in giving his beloved Son for fallen men, that they might through obedience be transformed and become the acknowledged sons of God. The return journey. While in Salem, I formed the acquaintance of Brother and Sister Donaldson, who desired that their daughter should return to Battle Creek with us and attend the college. Her health was poor, and it was quite a struggle for them to part with her, their only daughter, but the spiritual advantages she would there receive induced them to make the sacrifice. Not long afterward, at a camp meeting in Battle Creek, she was buried with Christ in baptism. This was another proof of the importance of Seventh-day Adventists sending their children to our school, where they can be brought directly under a saving influence. On our voyage from Oregon, we made many pleasant acquaintances and distributed our publications to different ones, which led to profitable conversation. When we arrived at Oakland, we found that the tent was pitched there, and that quite a number had embraced the truth under the labors of Elder William Healy. We spoke several times under the tent, Sabbath and First Day. The churches of San Francisco and Oakland met together, and we had interesting and profitable meetings.